From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, fishermen on San Francisco's public piers are trying to feed their families, but they may be risking their health.
Some of the fish that live in San Francisco Bay have mercury in them. Actually, most fish have mercury in them. And certain kinds of fish have lots of mercury in them.
Then we'll talk with documentarian Claire Schoen about the Bay's rising water.
How we're going to adapt to the flooding that is coming to communities that live by the water because of climate change.
And we'll join a group of people practicing an ancient maritime tradition, the sea shanty.
A good shanty man would keep a shanty going as long as that's needed.
We're setting sail today on Cross Currents. Every year, hundreds of fishermen from San Francisco to Martinez try their luck on public fishing piers that jut into the bay. Some are just there for fun, but in a tight economy, many more are catching meals for their families. And that has state health officials worried. They say heavy metals and other toxins are finding their way onto a greater number of dinner plates. Julia Scott reports.
It's crab season in California, and commercial fishermen can't unload their catches fast enough to satisfy the crowds filling Fisherman's Wharf. But out on the public piers behind the Embarcadero, away from the big boats, you'll find a different breed of fishermen. They set out their poles, unroll their lines, add some bait, and wait quietly for dinner to arrive. These are subsistence fishermen, men like Mr. Chen, who prefers a pier near the end of the ferry building. He didn't want his first name used. Mr. Chen's fished here for a few years, and since 2008 or so, when the economy tanked, he's had plenty of company.
I've been here a long time. The fish have been dwindling.
Community outreach workers say a growing number of people, often poor Asians and African Americans, are dining out at the piers. More people fishing means there are fewer fish to go around, which makes the ones Mr. Chen can catch all the more precious.
I just learned how to fish. If I catch anything, it's smelt.
It's an enticing prospect. Aspiring fishermen on local shores can expect salmon, croaker, sturgeon, even the occasional rock crab, all for free. But there's a big trade-off.
Some of the fish that live in San Francisco Bay have mercury in them.
Margie Gassell works for the State Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment.
Actually, most fish have mercury in them, and certain kinds of fish have lots of mercury in them.
Gassell's worried that mercury, PCBs, and other industrial chemicals could make fishermen like Mr. Chen sick, and that they won't know until they're very sick.
People aren't going to get obviously sick after eating fish, but the contaminants can build up in their bodies and can cause harm.
The metals' effects on adults aren't well known, but mercury poisoning can cause serious disabilities in newborns. And that's why pregnant women are supposed to stay away from fish. So when they realized how high mercury levels were in fish from the bay, Gassell's agency considered outlawing fishing altogether. Ultimately, they decided to issue a new fish advisory that put some fish off limits to some people. For example, children and women between the ages of 18 and 45 should never eat surf perch, striped bass, sharks, or sturgeon from the bay. Men should keep it to no more than one serving per week.
Yeah, people talk. People always talk. Heavy metal pollution, right? Radiation pollution?
To fishermen like Mr. Chen, mercury poisoning is an abstract concept compared with hunger. Chen says he's not really focusing on it.
There's a lot of pollution out there, but I can't worry about everything.
And it's like, we just get fish as fish, food as food. You know, you get what you get. If you're hungry, you eat it. How can you say, you know, rationalize it or, like, you know, proportion the fish or the consumption?
That's Framari Safan. She works with APA Family Support Services, a collection of community groups that does health and crisis intervention with Asian and Pacific Islander families.
When you go fishing, you bring a fish home, you cook the food. You don't cook the food for different members of the family, and you don't say, okay, here, you only get this little portion, and because you're only five and you're a girl.
Safon says the fish warnings often miss the mark with families, if they hear them at all. Many fishers don't speak English, and some are illiterate.
Hi, Jennifer.
That's why the California Department of Public Health hired APA Family Support Services and three other agencies to reach out to these fishermen. Over the next 6 months, they'll translate the fish advisory pamphlet into several languages, including Cambodian, Samoan, and Korean. They'll spend time on the piers, finding out what kind of fish people are catching and whom they're eating it with. A survey taken in 2001 found that most fishermen earn less than $20,000 a year, and that 1 in 10 was eating unsafe amounts of fish. Officials have never measured how many subsistence fishermen are out on the bay, but Gasell says they're in the thousands.
To date, I don't think anybody has really figured out how to find subsistence fishers. We just kind of know or have a sense that there are people who rely a lot on fish for food.
Safon says what they've learned so far suggests finances trump health concerns every time.
You know, why do a fish versus, you know, let's say a cup of noodle? A cup of noodle will probably feed one person barely for one meal, but a fish can feed three or four person in a family and can even, you know, you can even use like every part of the fish.
Safon herself is familiar with this quandary. Her family's from Laos, and they fish too. So what happens when they bring fish home from the bay that she knows she shouldn't eat?
I don't decline, actually. So, I don't know, it's a family pressure, cultural pressure, or, you know, because it looks really good. So when they prepare, they catch the fish, they prepare it, you know, of course I'm going to eat it.
Some Asian families tell Safon they can't understand why they shouldn't feed their children fish. She knows just what they're going through.
I have a 3-year-old daughter, you know, as long as the bones are out and it's safe to eat in that aspect, then, you know, we eat it. I do feel that dilemma as far as, you know, do I not give my daughter this food even though I learn about this advisory?
It's an issue fishing families will have to contend with for years to come, and one that health officials will continue to watch. In San Francisco, I'm Julia Scott for Cross Currents.
There's a postscript to that story. If you're eating fish from the bay, officials say an easy way to remove some of the contamination is to skin the fish, then broil it or bake it, so the fatty juices can drip off. It's a good way to remove PCBs, but it won't work for mercury, which binds to protein in fish meat. You can also just stick with salmon or rockfish. Health officials say those are safe for everyone. For more information about the San Francisco Bay Fish Advisory and related links, visit our website at kalw.org. Click on News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. One of the most imminent effects of climate change is sea level rise, especially in low-lying coastal areas like the San Francisco Bay. To documentarian Claire Schoen, this story isn't about the science of what's going to happen. That part is settled. She says the question is how we're going to adapt. Here's a clip from her new radio documentary, Rise.
If we do nothing in the next century, what we'll have is Venice by the Bay. We'll have streets that are now canals and tall buildings rising out of these of this waterway.
I mean, the guy up on the 20th floor of the tower may be okay until he tries to leave.
Well, for those of us who dwell on the 24th floor, like myself, we'll have no problem as long as we have a canoe to get to our building.
Is the new commute vehicle for the Financial District of San Francisco going to be a canoe, not a limo? Interesting to contemplate.
But you could not inhabit the city if it were flooded. Even a foot of water would stop the city. If nothing were done, we'd have an empty city.
That was a clip from Claire Schoen's radio documentary, Rise. I asked her to tell me what inspired her.
Well, I've been producing media, first in film, then radio, and also now multimedia for
A lot of years. And I've produced stories on probably every subject out there. But my real passion, my interest and passion, is environmental education, using media to educate people about the environment. And over the last 10 years or so, I've come to feel that there is no topic that is more important than climate change. If we don't figure this one out, the rest of them don't matter. So that's where I was coming from with this piece. And I took a look at my neighborhood, the San Francisco Bay Area, to tell personal stories of a national and international issue, which is how we're going to adapt to the flooding that is coming to communities that live by the water because of climate change.
Right. And the San Francisco Bay is a perfect place to locate that because obviously San Francisco itself is bordered on three sides by water and so many of the other cities touch it. What did you learn in researching and putting together this documentary about how sea level rise as a result of climate change is affecting different cities and will be affecting us further?
What I learned is that we are sitting in a what's called a 100-year floodplain. This is an area that is supposed to flood every 100 years. And what climate scientists are saying is that within the next 40, 50 years, we're going to be seeing that 100-year floodplain turn into a 50-year floodplain, 10-year floodplain, 1-year floodplain. Every high tide, we may have floods. So a lot of us are in trouble. In fact, all of us are in trouble because even if you don't live within that plain, and by the way, that plain includes San Francisco Financial District, most of the towns of Silicon Valley, the town of a lot of the East Bay towns, or at least the edges of them all, San Jose, and a lot of that land was built on landfill. 40% of the bay has been filled in, turned into real estate. And so that land, which was built up to sea level, today's sea level, is going to be below sea level pretty soon.
That's Claire Schoen. She's a media producer and producer and director of Rise, a radio documentary about climate change and coastal communities. So one of the ways in which you explored these coastal communities was to talk with Paul McHugh. And he's a longtime writer, and we hear from him in your documentary in a very interesting place. I want to play a clip of Paul McHugh. Let's hear from that right now.
I'm Paul McHugh, longtime Bay Area resident, longtime Bay Area writer, and a very longtime Bay Area kayaker.
About to do one of my favorite things, which is launch a sea kayak onto San Francisco Bay and go for a tour.
So, Claire, tell me a little bit about Paul McHugh.
Paul has been a journalist, a Bay Area journalist, for over 30 years, and he writes about the environment because he's a great outdoorsman.
He's got a really romantic way of seeing things, too. Let's hear from him just a little bit more.
It's a pearl gray day. There's a high fog and a kind of silvery light, and that reflects off the surface of the bay. So it's a pewter experience this morning, paddling along.
That's Paul McHugh. He's a writer, tells a lot of stories about the outdoors and the Bay Area. And we're hearing from him in his kayak as he goes along the Embarcadero and the Financial District and other parts of the Bay Area. So, Claire, tell me, what kinds of observations did Paul make to you and for the documentary about sea level rise and how it's going to affect San Francisco Bay?
We sent him out on 4 trips by himself with binaural microphones. Those are 2 little mics that are attached to his hat right next to his ears. So wherever he turns his head, you, if you're wearing headphones, hear what he heard. Makes it interesting, if you're listening to the documentary, you can, with headphones on, you can hear his paddling in your left ear, your right ear, your left ear. Really experience it with him. And he talked about what he saw. Both the beauty of the bay and little otters, sea otters popping up here and there and the birds overhead. But he's also seeing the bay from the eye level perspective and what could be happening. He's seeing it from the perspective of sea level because he's down there at sea level. So as he's passing by levees, which are hopefully protecting the Financial District, Foster City, a lot of these urban areas that we go to in the stories, he sees just how low those levees are compared to where he's sitting and what damage big storms with sea level together could be causing.
This is multimedia producer Claire Schoen, who lives in the Bay Area. She's the producer and director of RISE, a radio documentary about climate change and coastal communities. One of the places that you talk about in RISE is the Delta, the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta. And I'd like to play a clip of one of the people who you talk with. He's a scientist named Jeff Mount. And right here, what we're going to hear is him describing how the Delta is created.
So where is the Delta in California? Well, you'd be amazed how many people have a clue, including the people of San Francisco. It's flanked on the east by the Sierra Nevada, and all of that runoff from the west slope of the Sierra Nevada is gathered into the Sacramento River on the north and the San Joaquin River on the south. Where those two rivers come together, that's the Delta. And in that area, tremendous maze of islands and levees and marshes. Then all that water in the Delta eventually moves to the west and into San Francisco Bay. So that's what the Delta really is.
That scientist, Jeff Mount, he's talking about the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta. And you use him, Claire, to show what's going to happen with that Delta with sea level rise. But also, you put him next to a farmer who lives and works within the Delta, and they both have very different perspectives on what climate change and sea level rise can do to that area. I'd like you to talk to me about that difference in perspective.
Well, that farmer is Steve Mello. He's a third-generation farmer in the San Francisco Bay Delta, and he's grooming his son, Gary, to be the fourth generation in his family. He really sees himself as building a legacy within that this land, this community. The problem is that there are these pockets of land, as Jeff Mant described. They call them islands, although they are sunk as much as 20 and 30 feet below sea level and surrounded by these fingers of water coming down from the Sierras off of the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers and into San Francisco Bay. And what the only thing keeping that sunken land and the fingers of water apart are these levees. The levees are old. They're made of mud and a lot of other stuff and can only be built so high. And they have broken before. But as Jeff Mount argues, what the scientific community understands is that they will not hold with sea level rise and extreme weather. It's just one step too far, and he predicts, Jeff Mount predicts, that within 50 years, half of those islands are going to be flooded, and that whatever Steve Mello may want, he can't stay there.
So in the course of your three-hour documentary, the three parts that you talk about, all different parts of how sea level rise and extreme weather is affecting the world, you come to some solutions, you hear about some. I'd like to hear what some of the possible solutions to this there are. Obviously, you know, if people use less fossil fuels, if they are more conscious perhaps about how they're treating the environment, but specifically in San Francisco Bay, where we're so surrounded by water, where it's a factor of life and there are so many low-lying areas, what are some of the solutions that people came up with that you heard about?
Well, it's this issue of mitigation and adaptation again. What you were saying is, how are we going to mitigate? How are we going to slow climate change? But to the extent we can't slow it anymore, that we can't halt these impacts, how are we going to adapt to them? Well, there are two traditional solutions. So here in the Bay Area, we are going to commit to levees to protect our airports, the financial district, some of these really economically valuable pieces of land. There are real problems with levees. You can only build so high. It cuts off the land from the water. It destroys wildlife habitat. Levees always fail. It's just a matter of when they're going to fail. It's hugely expensive to maintain them. But we are going to have to do some of that. The other traditional solution is wetlands. And wetlands are a great solution where you can do them, but you have to have the land to do it. We can't eliminate Foster City and put a wetland back in there. What we need to do is get creative. We need to figure out what else we can do.
That's Claire Schoen. She's creator of a new documentary series on sea level rise in the Bay. KALW's Erica Mu is the series' assistant producer. You can find more information at their website. It's searise.org. What do you think should be done about climate change and sea level rise? What are you doing about it? Join the discussion on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. And now it's time for Artery, cultural coverage that sings like a pirate.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
More than a quarter century ago, the San Francisco Maritime Museum started a program of sea shanties, the work songs of sailors from the time when ships still had sails. It's now the oldest such program in the country. Every month, people gather to preserve this bit of the common man's history simply by singing. In a story from our archives, so much fun, KALW's Stephen Short reports.
It's clear that Peter Kaysen is a national park ranger. He wears the distinctive hat and has a badge on his khaki-colored shirt. On his belt, he has a very official-looking walkie-talkie, and on his lap, he has a fiddle. He's a singing ranger aboard the Balclutha, an 1880s sailing vessel at San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park.
We sing shanties, which were the work songs of sailors.
Park rangers preserve and protect our national treasures. Kaysen protects an invisible treasure. He is the only one in the National Park Service hired to preserve songs from our nautical past.
I think these shanties represent a real window into our past. And we are fortunate that there were people around to collect these songs and keep these songs alive.
Kaysen leads visitors in the songs and a semblance of the work that went with it. With the winds roaring in off the bay, this group turns a hub that was used to raise the anchor.
Heave away, cheerily! That was a cold and cheery morning in December.
It's great fun, but folklorist Archie Green says these songs changed when they became fun. He thinks they lost their authenticity when they ceased being sung by sweating sailors.
The current tradition of shantying at maritime museums and seaports, it's good in that it keeps the interest alive, but it's not so good in terms of a representation of reality.
Now, ballads, Green says, tell a story and so have a set length.
But a sea shanty, it has no beginning or end because sea shanties are functional.
Now, some of the jobs are very short. Some of the jobs go in a long time.
A lanyard shanty for hauling up a flag takes less than a minute, but hauling or lowering the anchor on the windlass, that might take hours.
Good shanty man would keep a shanty going as long as that's needed.
The songs about Reuben Ranzo or Billy Riley are made-up names that come to the surface as a shanty man develops a shanty out of his heart. Or there's a love story, usually in fantasy, because the seaman, that was a low-paid job virtually, enslaved.
She looked in my face and smiling said she, oh,
the seamen would have imaginative songs about fair maidens and fair damsels, and they'd spin out their fantasies in the shanty.
Today, sea shanties are entertainment, not work songs, and that changes the pace.
If sailors had worked to the pace set by the Yale Glee Club, they'd all be dead. It can't be done.
Every month, Kaysen ratchets back to the old speed. Here, inside the Balclutha, about 100 people gather to keep the old songs alive and lively. Melanie Van Patten has been coming regularly from Oakland for 11 years.
We just thought it was the most wonderful thing we'd ever done. Here we are on, you know, a ship that's over 100 years old that sailed around Cape Horn 17 times, you know, and I've always wanted to run away to sea, and now I can and be home in time for dinner.
Often there are nearly as many first-timers as old salts, like Robert Abbott.
It's therapeutic singing, and you're going to feel good. Even though your voice may not be great or you may not have great musical skills, you fit in. Your voice will always fit in, and you aren't going to feel self-conscious about it if you're just singing along.
Ranger Kaysen agrees.
Just have fun there and learn something about the songs, and you learn something about your heritage, your maritime heritage.
The lusty singing of the shanties in San Francisco Bay may not give a perfect picture of the extremely difficult life these sailors led, but what is apparent is a sincere appreciation for the artistry of those who created these songs. They were sung under harsh conditions. Yet, as Robert Abbott says,
you have this great sense of kind of happiness, a sense of joy.
In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
All for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog. All for me beer and tobacco, for I spent all
yo ho, yo ho. Can you sing a sea shanty? Give us your best on our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You might just hear yourself on the R.
Me jolly, jolly grog. All gone me beer and tobacco. For I spent all me tin on the lasses drinking gin. And across the Western Ocean I must wander.
You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Rose Arrieta, Audrey Dilling, Carolina Hidalgo, Holly J. McDeed, Byron McGovern, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Holly Kernan is our news director. Cross Currents theme music is provided by Oakland's John Santos Quintet. City Carshare provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Carshare is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Are you ready for a break from Christmas carols? If so, you might want to know that the band you're hearing now, Andre Thierry and Zydeco Magic, is playing next Wednesday at the Elbow Room in San Francisco. They're opening for another local feel-good band, the California Honeydrops. It'll be a dance party to ring in the winter. Find the details at our newly spiffed up website, kalw.org. Click on News. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.